You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those unneeded deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me, as always, is my son, Carlos. How are you today, Carlos?
Oh, I'm not too bad. How's yourself?
Not too bad. Let's go over last night's event.
Not that much.
Yeah. It was Fight Night 169. We'll quickly go through the prelims. We started with Sean Brady picking up the decision against Ismael Nurdiev in the welterweights. Then we got the first round finish of the night, and it certainly would not be the last in the featherweight division, where Spark Carlisle knocked Aylan Cruz out. Then staying in the featherweights, we got a second round submission by Jordan Griffin on TJ Brown. Moved up to the lightweights with the vicious Bob Ross. He got the decision against Steve Garcia. Then we went into the heavyweights with Marcin Tybura picking up the win over Sergey Spivak by decision. Brendan Allen got the victory in the middleweight division against Tom Breeze with another first round knockout. And then the feature prelim was Carla Phillips beating Gabriel Silva by decision in the bantamweight division. Going on to the main card, and five fights on this main card, total of 21 minutes of action. Only two fights actually got out of the first round. The first fight, Grant Dawson in the featherweight division picking up the sub victory against Derek Minna. Start of this fight, I'm surprised that Dawson actually got this victory, because this first fight, Minna was all over Dawson like a rash. His ground game was superb. The way he were going for the chokes and the way he could transition, he looked like he just had such power in them arms to lock those chokes in. But good on Dawson for having like the calmness and the wherewithal to kind of last through them. Dawson eventually ended up getting his own kind of submissions in that first round. I think he tried for an arm triangle at one point. He kind of gave up on it.
No, he didn't give up on it. He tried to follow through with it. It's just his knee were trapped.
Yeah, he was not over the elbow.
He weren't like in full mount. Obviously, we've seen heavyweights submitting side control before from that position, but he weren't in full mount. His knee were trapped, and when he got it out, think of that. Well, like 10 seconds left at round, so we couldn't really do nothing with it.
Yeah, but he kind of ended that round on top with that grounder pound he was doing. I think the bell kind of saved Derek Minna in that round. I would have given the first round actually to Minna, to be fair, because of how well he did in the earlier minutes with the control. Going into the second round, totally different story. Took 1 minute and 38 seconds of that second round for Dawson to get that rear naked choke locked it in, and match over. First fight, 6 minutes 30 of action. Grant Dawson picking up a really good victory against Derek Minna.
Definitely. One thing about Dawson is that the way he were coming in, looking at this fight, he was supposed to fight a different opponent. Minna took the fight in 11 days. That's a very short time to take a fight, especially against someone like Dawson. I know he's not a big name, but he is a very tough opponent.
He's 14-1, so he's got that kind of pedigree. And I know Derek Minna's been around the block in terms of MMA for a while, but he's never got to the UFC before. And I think he did really well to like kind of put himself in the picture, but obviously Grant Dawson has had that UFC experience and that kind of shone through.
Well, that's it. You can tell that Dawson has had more UFC octagon experience than Minna. The manner they both came into this fight. Dawson said, "If he don't finish me within the first 2 minutes, he's not going to finish me." That's the sort of the type of fighter Minna is, and on that sort of sense, I do agree with him. Minna is one of them. He'll throw near enough everything at you in the first round and start slowing down going into the second and the third, but yeah, going back to the guillotine, he had Dawson in some scary positions in that first round, and I know a lot of people would say Dawson got the first round because he had more control time. He had 3 minutes on top, but like we both seen, he did only have 3 minutes on top, but that was just basically lying on him trying to get that arm triangle. He only had the success at the last 30 seconds of the fight when he started getting off a bit of grounding pound. I do believe if that fight went on another 30 seconds, I think the referee would have jumped in and stopped it, and he would have finished that in the first. But unfortunately, like I say, he
left that too.
Exactly. Yeah. But going into the second, you could just see where Miller just started to just slow down, and how quickly Dawson were able to take that full mount near enough straight away. Like you could see in the first round, it took him near enough to the end just to get into a full mount position, and he couldn't really do a lot with it. Now in the second, he got straight into where he left off at round one. That's the sort of experience you're looking for in that fight. He knew at the end of round one he were having success in the position that he had, so go straight back to that in round two, and if it doesn't work, change it, but if it works, leave it as it is. And that's the sort of mindset and the experience you've got to have to win these fights and to climb up the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. So then let's go into the second fight in the women's featherweight division. Megan Anderson taking on Norma Dumont, making her UFC debut. This fight ended in the first round, 3.5 minutes.
Shit.
It started off actually quite tit for tat when Anderson threw a shot. Dumont quickly kind of returned it. Dumont first went in for a takedown, didn't quite get it, but she was able to power Anderson towards the cage and secured some double underhooks. She landed a couple of good knees to the body, and I think she landed one to the thigh as well, which looked like it really kind of stung Anderson. Anderson did well to kind of reverse the position she was in, but Dumont did even better to re-reverse it and get Anderson back up against the cage. Dumont then got the takedown with the grabbing hold of the single leg and kind of dragging Anderson to the floor. But Anderson, the wily fighter that she is, quickly again reversed that position. They both got to the feet, and then just whilst they're in the middle, there was a little bit of an exchange, and then Anderson lands a right hand that just cleans out Dumont. Dumont's down on the floor. For me, Dumont looked very, very dazed. I would have said maybe that Kevin McDonald jumped in a little bit too early, but I can honestly see why he did jump in, because that shot absolutely floored Dumont. He called the fight off, and Megan Anderson scored a very quick and very decisive victory there.
Shit, that right hand that Megan Anderson landed on fucking Dumont's chin.
The slow motion of it was just you could see her face contour.
Well, you could see the one thing, actually, before I get into that, the one thing I want to give to Dumont is a lot of people wouldn't have the bollocks to say, I want my debut and call out Megan Anderson as for what she's been able to do in the UFC already, and not a lot of people would try and do what she did. If some of them fucking bombs that she were throwing landed, yeah, I believe that would have hurt Megan Anderson, but thank God they didn't, and well, in her case, she were hoping they fucking did. But the one thing I've got to give it to her is how much she were able to control Megan up against the cage using the clinch work. But Megan were able to use the reach that she's got, basically hooking the face and pushing it back to try and get a bit of distance, and then that knee that she threw that literally came straight up the middle and just you could just see it just clipped her on chin. It didn't hit perfectly, it didn't have full connection. You could see Dumont's head just go a little bit up. You could just see how it clipped, and Dumont's arsehole squeezed at that moment in time thinking, fuck me, if that were another inch up, that would have cleaned me out. But yeah, going in, Megan Anderson knew straight away, as soon as she were able to break clinch and get some room, she had respect for Dumont, because she knew, hang on a minute, this she might be a new girl, she might be a loudmouth who's saying she wants to fight me and she wants to fight Nunes, and but she got a bit of respect out of Megan then when she were able to outpower her in some of them positions. So when Megan Anderson knew that they were able to break clinch, she had in her head, fuck, I don't want this woman to put me up against Cage again. That were hard work trying to fucking get off. She's got some power and she's got some strength behind her. And the experience took over straight away. She were able to just land that perfect right, and you could just see DeMont just go out, and the ref stopped it perfectly. Even when Megan Anderson were walking over and tried with that hammer fist, all the thing she had to do was just fucking waving in air and landing. This would have been a perfect one, but the referee saved DeMont perfectly timed. As soon as that shot landed, you could just see her eyes go back, and she were out on her feet. When she dropped to her arse, her body might have been in autopilot, putting her hands down defending, but there were no one at that fucking door.
Then let's go into the live weight division now with Magomed Ankalaev and Ion Cutelaba. And again, this is Kevin McDonald as the referee. I think he refed three fights in a row.
He's going to get murdered soon.
This was another first round knockout, and another potentially controversial first round knockout. This one didn't last quite as long as the Megan Anderson one. It only went 38 seconds. Started with Cutelaba being, as he normally starts about, very, very aggressive. Started with low kicks, high kicks. Then Ankalaev just took over, landed a very vicious combo, then a couple of head kicks, a liver kick, another head kick, and Cutelaba, watching it in real time, looked absolutely punch drunk. It looked like he was not all there and he was just swinging for the fences. And this is where Kevin McDonald stepped in and stopped the fight, but the reactions from Cutelaba as soon as the fight was stopped, that to me kind of indicated that was an early stoppage. He reacted really quickly. He was so upset that the fight had stopped. Now, give that an extra 30 seconds and I think he would have been cleaned out, because he did look punch drunk. We have the kind of the fortune to be able to watch it in slow motion and watch the replays, and we could see that some of those head kicks didn't land flush whilst there was still contact there. I don't think Cutelaba was as punch drunk as maybe he was. I don't want to say acting, but there's not really another way to describe it. I think he was just off balance, swinging for the fences, and that, when you add them two together, it kind of does look like he was out for the count. I think the shot that hurt him the most for me was the liver shot. You could see where he just, all his air left his body, and you could see him wince in pain. Was it an early stoppage? Possibly. If you'd have given that another 30 seconds, would we have got a definitive knockout? Almost definitely, Carlos.
I'm surprised you didn't start off with that fight with fucking, I thought they were going to start fighting before Bell.
When he walked out to him, I forgot about that.
Fuck me, them security, fucking fire them. If you've got a guy who's nicknamed the fucking Hulk and he's walking over with the eyes and the aggression of someone who's going to fucking murder you in your sleep, but wake you up before they do it, you get in there before he makes contact, and they allowed him to fucking basically hug. He got through towards the cage. It's like, what the... I know he's a scary guy if you were walking across, but do your fucking job. That could have ended badly. Thank God that they're both professionals and they could have swung when they did, and they didn't. They left it to the bell, But the one good thing, Kevin Peterson, he just straight away, when they went back, he was just like, nah, fuck you, like, get out, they're already ready to fight, fucking let them. We don't need to talk, fucking get out of my fucking cage. But no, you are right in what you were saying. We get the added benefit of watching the slow-mo, so we could see that the kicks didn't land as well as they looked in real time. What I said in that fight is, he did get clipped with... Now, off the top of my head, I don't know if it was the body kick or the head kick that got him, but he definitely took a right hand, a right hook, and that fucking there, for me, that stunned him and that wobbled him. And that's when he started acting the way he did. I don't know if it were acting or whatever it was, he was stunned, but... Well, I'll say, no, fuck it, he was stunned. He was definitely stunned for me. But I'm going to say what I said to you earlier. Kevin Pearson, Anderson. Fuck, why do I keep on calling him Pearson?
Why'd you call him Anderson?
I don't know.
McDonald.
Kevin McDonald. Fuck, mate. Kevin McDonald. I feel sorry for him in a way, because about 4 hours ago, I thought to myself that were a shit decision, that were a shit stoppage. Now, I've obviously now watching the slow-mo, watching the real time, there is a big difference. Like, yeah. when you've got a light heavyweight throwing them kicks, even when they don't land and they're getting blocked, that's still a lot of fuzz, yeah. A lot of noise you're hearing. So that's, and when your opponent's acting like, say for instance, that Silva did at Wildman fight when he were acting pissed, yeah. And then he got clipped. That's what I believe could have happened in that fight if it went on another 30 seconds. But the fact is, it didn't happen. He should have knew that the guys who we were refereeing, these guys can take punishment, they can also give punishment. Now, if he weren't on his arse or down and out, and you know he weren't, he should have let the fight go on. But because he hasn't got the added benefit of watching the slow-mo, he's only got the added benefit of standing in front of these guys and watching it in real time.
Yeah.
When he's throwing them kicks, they look like they landed. Their both head kicks look like they landed, and that body kick definitely landed, because you can fucking hear it from a mile off.
Watching that fight for the 40 seconds that it lasted, or less than 40 seconds, anyone would see that and say Kutalaba looked like he was absolutely punch drunk.
Yeah,
it looked like he was not all there, and he was just swinging out of survival or muscle memory. And I think, looking at it now, I think Kevin was probably right to make that stoppage, and it's just we have the benefit of being able to really analyse it and critique it, where he's got to make a choice there and then. And I do feel sorry for him that he's had two fights where he's been put in that position where he could have potentially made the wrong choice.
Well, that's it. And going off Kutalaba, is obviously his last win against Roundtree, which were a big win, and then going into this fight where was supposed to basically be the war of the night for this card. It was supposed to be two light heavyweights going to go in there who can land bombs. Now, obviously, we didn't get that. Now, we can say before we even finish the show that there's only one way this fight will end after this is like they said in the post-fight press conference, it needs to happen again. Now, that's when Kutalaba has got the chance to maybe not, if he was acting, I'd say we're not saying he were, I think he was stunned, but yeah. If he were acting at parts that, maybe this, if he were to get the rematch, maybe don't act like a dick, just go in there, do your job. Mm-hmm. If you have recovered from being hurt, don't act like you're being hurt, because the ref has got a job to make sure you're safe. Yeah. So if you've recovered from getting wobbled, don't stand there wobbling your fucking head about giving that ref.
I don't personally think he did recover from it. I think he was wobbled, and I think he was fighting like in like survival mode, but I also think it wasn't as bad as it looked in real time.
Well, that's it. It's like the old saying goes: don't leave it to the judges. In this saying,
it's don't leave it to the ref.
Yeah, in this case, it's don't leave it to the ref. Don't give the ref an excuse to stop that fight. Now, when you're stood there and you're taking a body kick and two head kicks and a fucking hook, and you're still wobbling your head about, that's that ref's excuse and decision to go, hang on a minute, this guy's fucking full on hurt and he's probably going to have his potential brain damage.
Yeah, concussion.
So I need to stop this fight. Now, if he weren't that's, you could sort of say that was his own fault for acting like a dick. But, like you say, in your case, if he wasn't wobbled, he's made a perfectly good decision there to stop that fight, because, like I say, at the end of the day, it is all about fight safety.
Absolutely. So going into the co-main event, we had another women's featherweight match. We have Felicia Spencer taking on Zara Farn. Another first round knockout. This one was pretty much more decisive than the last two, though, I think. Well, certainly more decisive than the Kutalaba one. It started with Spencer with the kicks, high kick at the beginning, couple of jabs from both ladies. Spencer kind of looked like she was struggling to get in like the pocket with Fern. Fern was obviously the much bigger fighter here. Fern was doing well at the beginning to keep Spencer at distance, but Spencer then started going for a takedown, and it took quite a while for her to get it, but she eventually did sweep that leg, and she got the takedown, got into mount position, which she landed in pretty much perfectly. Started with some short punches and elbows. Fenn, you could see that her ground game was not the best, and she really, really did struggle. She had a lot of brutal elbows. She tried to roll on her back, but Spencer quickly powered her back over, and she just started laying into her. Mergliotta kind of took the opposite way of reacting than Kevin McDonald. He kind of let this go maybe a little bit too long, to be fair. Yeah. So we're not getting that exactly perfect balance with the referees, but he did eventually wave this fight off, and Spencer picked up a really good victory, and both ladies who won these featherweight fights on the main card, both top fives, both making a shout for maybe getting a title match.
Well, that's it. For me, when I was watching this fight, I thought to myself, like, Felicia Spencer, she had a fair cracking fight with Cyborg. I enjoyed that fight a bit. Mm-hmm. And then coming into this fight, I thought, who the fuck is Zara? I've never heard of her before. So I had a bit of a look up who she were, and she had some impressive victories, but she was making a debut.
No, okay. I think she lost her first fight, if I remember right. So
she lost her first fight. She fought last October.
Yeah.
Fought against Megan Anderson, Tara. But yeah, when this fight got announced, I thought, who the fuck's that?
Yeah.
So obviously did a bit of research. She lost her first fight to Megan Anderson. But then I thought to myself, like, fuck me, like, this is potentially literally her last chance, because she came in UFC, she lost against Megan Anderson, and now she came into this fight, and I literally thought to myself, like, fucking hell, like, Dana White makes fighters go through the Ultimate Fighter series, Dana White's Contender series, a lot of other stuff, and it's like, what the fuck, Dana? It's like, Felicia Spencer were in there, and she was mauling her. Now when Zara were coming out, they put on the little tab, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu purple belt. When Spencer had her in that full mount, she didn't have a fucking clue what to do. She didn't attempt to push her feet down once.
She had no idea what she was doing.
She didn't have a fucking clue. It was literally, is a lamb, slaughter the bitch.
Yeah.
And that's the...
And you know, you make a good point there, because I think for someone who's had two UFC fights and the people who she's had to fight, that's a murderer's row in that division that she's had to fight. The only way you could have been worse is if she fought Cyborg and Nunes. They're two of the top contenders in that division, and that's literally running a ring of fire. And fair play to her, yeah, she's been beat both times, but at least she stepped up and took these elite fighters on.
That's it. You could give her that, but like I say, when I was watching the fight, I watch it a different way. When I want to fight in the UFC, so it's like, I see fighters in the UFC, they need to be at full potential, because if I'm training that way, they need to be fucking training 10 times harder than me, because they're living my dream at the end of the day. When I see fighters like this getting into the octagon, it's like, Dana, why are you fucking feeding these lambs to these people? There is top talent out there that is fucking waiting, dying to get a phone call from you or Sean Shelby, or from a UFC fucking... Someone who worked... Either way, someone's waiting for that dream, and they're feeding people like these up to... Oh, like you're saying, a murderer's row. Who could give a better challenge? Now, going back onto a purple belt, whoever the fuck got that purple belt out of that cereal box, put it back in, because she's not a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. Simple as that. Can't give a fuck what anyone says. She... Oh, she's not a purple belt.
Yeah, it's... Sometimes when you see these fights, it's almost like UFC put so much heart behind someone like Felicia Spencer, who is a good fighter, don't get me wrong, but when she's got a record of 1-1, it's almost like she's been, I don't want to say kind of like her having her numbers padded, but giving her an easier opponent, to whether it's to build her confidence or to build her stats up, if you understand what I mean, to make her look more like a credible contender than maybe she is.
No, that's it. You've seen it a lot in UFC. You see it a lot in boxing, where you get fed a lot of cans, and then you've got your casual fans who, just because you've got Joe Rogan or Michael Bisping saying, oh, this fighter's on an 8-fight win streak, stuff like that. Yeah, but who are these people who they beat? Most of the time you'll see them and you'll be like, who the fuck is that? They've never fought on a regional level in their life. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you need to understand that going into the main event, when you say Benavidez is on a fucking 11-fight win streak, you know that he's had 11-fight win streak against fucking tough guys, against guys who would murder you. Now, when you've got women, you know, guys who are coming in who's fought absolutely nobody, who's got a good record because the manager, fucking Ali, says, oh, no, wait, he's a bit more dangerous, I don't want him to fight him, or I don't want her to fight her, we'll stick with this one because we know we've got a good chance at winning. That doesn't make fucking champions. Yeah. Well, in this case, in this day and age, apparently it does, because...
I mean, that's the issue with these women's divisions. We've always said that they are threadbare at the best of times, and unfortunately you sometimes have to fill the division with cans to make fights.
That's it.
Going into the fact that this card was built around basically to decide a new champion for the flyweight division after Henry Cejudo vacated that title, even though he didn't really want to. Joseph Benavidez, the kind of the bridesmaid of this division, taking on Davison Figueiredo. Another fight that this was actually the longest fight on the main card, and it still only got into the second round, just under 7 minutes. First round was I gave it to Figueiredo. He started with a touch of gloves at the stare down, but then they didn't touch gloves when they started the round, which felt a little bit weird because these two have been quite respectful of each other. Started with Benavidez has always been this kind of explosive fighter, and he started that way. The big issue I had with Benavidez in this first round was when he was going for his combos, he was leaving his head down and he was not watching what he was doing. And it didn't take long for Figueiredo to kind of pick up on that. There was a couple of attempts at a takedown. Figueiredo got hold of an armbar. Benavidez got away with that by doing almost a death roll. He escaped from that. Again, that was one where he was kind of just not above the elbow enough. Once he got back to the feet, Benavidez did what he does best, and he was landing those quick combinations. But then Figueiredo kind of started to be an aggressor in with his footwork, kept control in the centre of the octagon, landed a right. Benavidez went for a takedown, but that ended up getting stuffed, and he ended up getting a knee to the body for his troubles. It kind of looked like Figueiredo was the more fresher kind of a fighter, the more first off the draw kind of a fighter for getting his shots off. It ended the round where Benavidez it was almost like he slipped and was kind of knocked off balance. Going into the second, the best part for the early part of the second round for me is where they both cracked each other with right hands, and it was almost like a movie punch where they both kind of knocked each other back when they landed at exactly the same time. Benavidez did well again with his combinations, and then I think there was a headbutt. They kind of collided. I didn't quite see a good enough angle, but it looked like Figueiredo and Benavidez clashed heads, and that busted up Benavidez, and then you could see where that distracted him. He was wiping his eyes a lot. He got hit with a body shot and then got floored with a straight right, just sat straight on his arse. Figueiredo came in, walloped him with a couple more shots, and fight over. Dan Mergliotta called the fight off, and we've got a new flyweight champion in Davison Figueiredo.
See, that's it. Before I go on to this, Figueiredo, I like you in that. You're a top guy, but you're a fucking knob. Miss weight, you cock. Could have been a champion in this. You're going to have another fight. Oh, you cock. But going into this fight, I knew it was going to be a quality fight. Even though Figueiredo missed weight, I still knew that he was going to give it his all to fucking win this fight, because even he knew, he missed weight, but if he won it, he's going to get another shot. He's, the next fight, he's going to be in it to get that belt.
Well, I've got thoughts about that, but...
Oh, well, that's it. But, yeah, but Benavidez, for me, he came into this fight fighting like a don, like he usually does. His boxing is fucking phenomenal. His head movement is phenomenal.
It's interesting you say that, but when... For me, his head movement in this fight was his biggest flaw.
See,
especially when he was ducking down with his combos.
That's it. The only reason his head movement in that case looked off is because when you're counter defending, which he's a counter defensive boxer, sometimes he'll step forward when he wants to. He'll go back when he wants to. He most majority of the time does control the pace. So when he were going in, he knows that Figueiredo can hit a lot harder than him. He knows he's the faster boxer. And he can get the more combos off, and he knows that he could hurt him, but he knows that Figueiredo has got that power to, like we said, land that one shot and put your fucking lights out.
Yeah.
So the way he were finishing off his combos, he had that two or three fast shots, and then that last one, every single power he fucking had, and with the head down. Now that's where Figueiredo were obviously saw him. He was like, I know exactly what you're trying to build up as much power as you can to hurt me and knock me out because you know I can land that punch on you whenever I want. Well, not whenever he wants.
It's head movement. It kind of leaves that opening there for him.
Exactly, it leaves that opening perfectly. Now he didn't jump on it straight away, which I expected he did. But for this fight, fuck me, when they went down onto the ground in that armbar and they scrambled. That for me put me on my feet, and since then in that first round, I were on my feet, and every single thing they were doing were making me flinch. Fuck me, what was that? He just fucking hit him. It were amazing for me, but Benavidez were able to just keep calm, scramble his little arse off, and fucking get out of them positions, and not get subbed out by Figueiredo. Now, that's when you could see Figueiredo were just that little bit better on the ground. And Benavidez knew that he needed to keep the fight standing.
Yeah.
But then going in, he, like I say, his head movement, his quality, and going into where they ended up clash of heads. Now, a lot of people will jump on that, but that was just a total accident. It was the way they were going in, total accident. Now, for me, that I won't say it hurt him, it didn't put him out, but it stunned him a second. You could see where Benavidez, he was looking at Figueiredo, but his eyes were glazed over. When you're a fighter and you... Same thing when you're a fighter and you hit someone sweet on nose. You don't hurt them. You hit them sweet on nose and they'll start to... Eyes will glaze over a bit. If you hit them perfect enough, you'll get them to start crying. But the eyes will glaze over and it's not quite that. They'll see you. You've shocked them a little bit to where it's like, oh, what's going on here? So when he were bleeding and getting that disorientated from it clashing heads, when he were wiping it away, you could see where he was looking, but he weren't looking at the same time. So, and like I say, his head movement is phenomenal. So you knew straight away as a fighter, even his teammates would have seen straight away that like, fuck, he's hurt, because he's not one to get caught with a punch that you don't set up. And Figueiredo, if you've seen, a lot of people noticed, he didn't really set that right hand up. He just launched it.
Mm-hmm.
Now Benavidez is not one of them fighters to just stay in that firing line. If you don't set one of them punches up and launch it, most majority of the time, he's IQ of fighting, and for how many fights he's had and how much experience he's got, he knows, motherfucker, get your head out of the way before you get cracked with that. Now he didn't. His chin was wide open. He got cracked with it, and he paid the price for an accident. Now shit happens. It's one of them. Pick your chin up and move on. But Benavidez were doing really well to hit and move in that fight. But for me, it only took for me one shot to win potentially, could have won the belt. And yeah. I knew if Benavidez, because I was speaking to a guy who I work with, and he were asking me, because he's a fan of the UFC, and he were asking me like how I think it was going to go. I said if Benavidez were to win it for me, I think he'll use Formiga's Figueiredo's basically rounds against him. He won't try and take it to decision on purpose, but he'll rather take it to the third, fourth and fifth because he knows Figueiredo hasn't experienced them championship rounds, whereas Benavidez, he's experienced it a couple of times. He knows what getting to them five round feels like. He knows to keep up that pace. He knows that he can fight to that distance. And for me, that's the way you were going to win that fight. But then on the other hand, when he asked me how Flamengo were going to win the fight, I just straight up said to him, said that right hand. Yeah. He's done it so many different times. For that weight, he is at the perfect weight. He's got the perfect power, the perfect speed, and the perfect IQ to pick up that belt and keep hold of it.
Absolutely. So coming out of this card, for me, there's two talking points. The first one is with Megan Anderson and Felicia Spencer both picking up first round knockouts. Which one of them would you say faces Amanda Nunes?
See, I know a lot of people are going to go off that fight and go, they're going to want Spencer because she was a co-main event. A lot of people are going to take off that, oh, she was a higher up on the card, she deserves it. But fuck, no one deserves a title shot more than Megan Anderson. She fought everybody that she got asked to fight. She waited in line. She, for me personally, she should have got a title shot one or two fights ago.
Yeah, before GDR.
Yeah, that, exactly. She should have got a fight one or two fights ago, but she didn't. And the way that she were a professional and an animal for this woman to come in and say, I'm making my debut and I want to fight Megan Anderson, for her to say, yeah, fuck it, why not, I'll do it. Because this fight, this woman who she was fighting,
Norma
Dumont, she didn't have a lot of fights behind her, so that's not a lot of.
I think it was only like a fourth or fifth fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Like.
So that's not a lot of fight tape or a lot of experience that her coaches and that lot can go off. So that were
Megas. Dangerous fight.
Yeah, that were Megas and taking a risk of an unknown fighter coming in. What can this fighter actually do? Yeah, she's had a couple of fights, but what has she been training on? Because when Damon, I think when I was looking it up, she started mixed martial arts at the age of 15 and 16. She's proper young, but she started a mixed martial arts career late. So what's this new woman been learning and basically being able to do when she's only got this small amount of time that we can watch and study her?
Mm-hmm.
So that were a dangerous fight for Megan. So just off that alone and not off of previous fights, she gets the next title shot with Amanda Nunes at that weight.
Yeah, you know, I would absolutely totally agree. And just to like double down on that, I think if you're looking at both these fights, Anderson was way more dominant all the way through the fight, whereas like I said when we were talking about the Felicia Spencer fight, she kind of struggled at the beginning to get in that space. Now obviously she's still ground out a way more decisive victory, but I think Megan Anderson would give Amanda Nunes a lot more trouble than Felicia Spencer would right now.
Well, that's it, and not only that, I'm going to throw this out there. I watched basically in a poll on a social media platform, and they were basically saying how a guy put a big post on, I won't say it all, but a little bit's out of it, was getting pissed off of how champions aren't defending the belts. You've got people like Adesanya, Miocic, champions who are willing to defend their belt multiple times consistently. And you've got champions like Cejudo, who's fucking planting about Triple C and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, as much as it's all right and selling and making a big name for yourself, you've had to vacate a belt because you've held up a division, and you've only recently a month ago or something, has agreed to fight Aldo, so that's...
An Aldo that has only ever fought once at bantamweight and lost.
Exactly, so that for me is him looking and going, I can beat him. Yeah, fair enough. He might be looking at his legacy.
That's exactly what it is. It's a big name on his win loss record, and it's a big money fight. That's
exactly
what it is.
But he's still had fought since last year. Now you've got fighters.
Two divisions.
Exactly. You've got fighters and champions. Even Amanda Nunes. When last time she fought? Like what? Four, five months ago.
She fought Jermaine Durandamy. But I think the difference there is, her division aren't as stacked, and all the people underneath her are kind of beating each other, where we've had a massive bottleneck at flyweight and we've had a massive bottleneck at bantamweight waiting for Cejudo to defend.
Well,
her,
that's
so,
it.
And but I do understand the point. I don't think you should be able to be a multi-division champion.
Well, that's it. I didn't like it in the first place, because I've always agreed with Dana. I've always liked boxing as well as him. I've just never liked the fact is you can literally win a belt in one weight class and jump up every single way up until you're a 5-time different weight world champion, and that's when you're holding up the belt. It's like, look at Fury and AJ. Now I think they're willing to fight each other, and they've got like 5 belts between them. Mm-hmm. That's all the belts there at heavyweight and stuff like that. And then you've got Mayweather, who spanned it all the different, I think it was like 3 weight classes, and basically held all them belts at the same time and shit like that. So it's, well, for me, the boxing.
Prime example, if that is Dillian White, he's been number one contender since September of 2017, and he's been told by, I think it's the WBO, that he won't get his mandatory fight till February 2021. So he's been number one contender for 4 years, and it's been held up because the each organisation has different kind of mandatory fighters, and they each want the biggest fight.
That's exactly what's happening in the UFC.
It's not nowadays. It is about money, and I mean, I understand that it is a business, but when you're fighting someone like Jose Aldo, who's a massive name, but has lost his last fight and his only fight at that weight, how does that make him a championship contender when you've got fighters in that division who are in that division all the time, grinding victories and sat watching a part-timer come in and get you
exactly. It's exactly like what Khabib was saying about McGregor, the way that everyone's saying he should get the rematch. It's like, why? He's already been, if McGregor hasn't beat contenders who's next in line, Khabib is not bothered about beating McGregor again. He's bothered about facing Tony and then facing the other top contenders who's beat the guys who's earned their opportunity to fight for that belt, not people who's going to just give the, like he said, drama. Because that's what a lot of the casuals want to see. Not a lot of the casuals don't even train in mixed martial arts, or they ain't got a fucking clue. So when they're in there and they've got clinches exchanged and grappling exchanged, even basic simple boxing exchanges, they find it boring and they start fucking booing. It's like, you don't know what you're fucking watching.
As long-term fans, you're always going to see that. You're always going to see these big name fighters bring in this casual audience. We saw it with Brock Lesnar. Mm. He brought in a lot of the wrestling fans, and when they weren't seeing the kind of fights that they wanted to see or what they thought they were going to see, they start booing because they don't understand the intricacies of the sport. And you'll find that a lot of people are not necessarily MMA fans or UFC fans, but they're Conor McGregor fans, or they're Brock Lesnar fans, or they're Daniel Cormier fans, if you understand what I mean.
Well, that's it. But going back onto the topic in hand with the Megan Anderson, she definitely deserves that next shot at that weight.
I agree. Then the next one is the future of the flyweight division. I've spoken to Carlos before recording about my thoughts on it, but basically, I feel Dana White has never liked this division at all. He's always said that he's never really understood the kind of love for these really, really smaller weights. Even when we had the most dominant champion in a decade with Demetrius Johnson, it was kind of like an afterthought for Dana White. Obviously, he was then willing to trade DJ away for Ben Askren, another fighter he wasn't really particularly bothered about. So that kind of shows how much he was bothered about the flyweight division. Then Henry Cejudo is obviously this massive, charismatic fighter, and also an Olympic medalist. So that kind of give a reprieve to that division, but now he's vacated. I think that this was Dana's last kind of roll of the dice. He was kind of, I won't say hoping for a Benavidez victory, but I think he was saying, the thought is that if Benavidez won, the division kind of stayed alive. Now, obviously, with Figueiredo, first of all, missing weight, and then second of all, winning the fight, I don't think he's as marketable as Benavidez was. Certainly not as marketable as Cejudo or Demetrius Johnson was. And for me, I can see that this is the death knell for this flyweight division. Looking up and down the rankings, there's only one person who I'd like to see face Figueiredo. After that, it's a case of been there, kind of done that. All these fighters have had their shots, and there's no one who really stands out to say that's an exciting fight. The only person who I'd say is Askar Askarov. After that, I don't see Dana pushing this division much longer, and I think this fight is kind of like nailed down that this division's dead in the water.
See, as much as I'd like to agree with you, I can't in a way. I can see exactly where you're going, and I fully understand. Dana has clearly stated he doesn't like that division. Now, for me, Benavidez just lost that fight. He got knocked out fair and square, and I think they're gonna be willing to push to give that flyweight an opportunity, because they're gonna have Henry Cejudo taking the piss out of that division. Like, you're gonna tell all this stuff coming out like, oh, just the king is gone, no one can get my belt, just clearly shows and stuff like that. You can't even make weight and stuff. You just know all this stuff's gonna come from him. So the UFC can have to fight against the audience that he's gonna bring on this topic of, yeah, get rid of that weight, you're right. If Henry Cejudo's not there, then no one's gonna be the champion and shit. Mm-hmm. But I think the one thing they've got to save this weight is Kaya France.
I mean, look at his record. He's still lost 8 fights in his career.
He might have lost 8 fights in his career, but the one thing the UFC have got going for him is, who is his free training partners? Two of them who have just won world titles, one of them who's defended it successively and got a fight on the next card.
I understand that.
His partner who's looking at wanting to fight Khabib.
But he's also quite a big flyweight.
He might be.
And he could easily move up.
He could easily move up, but if you're...
I'm not saying that Dana's going to cut all these fights and say, right, this division's gone, you're all gone. I think the likes of... Ray Borg, the likes of Ruggiero Bontrin, the likes of Alexander Pantoja, they're all going to just be told that division's not around no more. Put pile on some muscle, pile on some weight, and you're going to be jumping into the next division up. See, I think that's what's going to happen.
That's the possibility. Obviously, that's what Cejudo's done. He's won the belt. He's put on the weight. He's gone up. He's saw the marketing where he's going. But for me, in that way, The last person to be Figueiredo were Formiga. Mm-hmm. And now Formiga, his last loss was to Benavidez.
So they're all eating each other.
They're all eating each other. Now, for me, if we were to go on who gets the... where that division goes after this, now if you are wrong and Dana does basically see past this and look at it as a way to fire this division up again, it's put Formiga against Kaya France. That fight's going to sell already, because you've already got City Kickboxing, who are fired up off getting two champions who are pushing for that lightweight division. So you're going to have a lot of people snooping around that weight and watching that weight because of City Kickboxing alone, of how much success they've had, and another one of their guys chasing another belt. Can they get 4 world titles by the end of 2021? That, for me, pushes that weight. Put Formiga up against Kaya France. Formiga, you've got going for him. Yeah, he might have lost his last one, but he's the only guy to... I think he's the only guy to beat Formiga, or the last guy to beat Formiga. And Kaya France, put him up against him, and you've got yourself there, either a title contention, or potentially you've got that far to go, right, Benavidez, we're going to give you your last shot. Fair enough, you lost the fight, and you could play off that headbutt, saying, yeah, he could go in the number one contender fight, because if it weren't for that headbutt, could it have gone the other way? Possibly. So you've already got it all set up there for Kaya France to fight for Formiga. If them two win each other, it's like, right, can we give one of these a title? Can we get away with pushing this guy so much where the fans agree with us, and the organisation agree with us, and the two gyms agree with us that this guy is, Kaya France, is a contender for the belt, and he can step up? Or can you push the guy who gone, fair enough, yeah, he did lose his fight, but he deserves his shot because he beat Kaya France, and he is also the last guy to beat Formiga. So for me, you've got a couple of different routes there, what you can go down, and you could push it, but for me, Kaya France is the guy where you're going to push that weight a lot more than all these other fighters. Like you were saying, all these other fighters are eating away at each other. They are not being able to make a name for themselves. But the people like Henry Cejudo, Formiga, Figueiredo, Kai Fran, all these people have already got slightly a bit of name about them. Right. Use that and build on it just for that sake of that
link. Yeah, I mean, you do make a good argument, but as a last little bit of evidence, I just want to just run through some stats with you. Right, so I'm going to go up the rankings from 15 to 1.
Right.
Okay. So we've got, at 15, we've got Machnell. Next fight, not booked. 14, Tarsem Nam. Next fight, not booked. 13, Raulin Pava, who just lost to Carcara France. Next fight, not booked. A little bit obvious there, though. Tim Elliott at 12. Next fight, not booked. Alex Perez at 11. Next fight, not booked. Rogério Bontrin, next fight, not booked. Carcara France, obviously, he's only just come off the win of De La Rosa, so you kind of can understand why he ain't got a fight.
Oh, he's already shouting for it.
Next fight, not booked. Yeah. Ray Borg at 8. Next fight, not booked. Askarov, next fight, not booked. Formiga, Brandon Reno, the only fight booked in this division against Formiga, and that fight is in 2 weeks. Then you've got Alexandra Pantoja, hasn't fought at all this year. Next fight, not booked. Davidson Figueiredo, obviously, just come off the fight with Benavidez. Juicy Formiga, like I mentioned, he's got Brandon Reno. Benavidez is was at rank 2, and he obviously fought yesterday. And then Henry Cejudo, top of the ranks, he's fighting Aldo in the bantamweight. So out of the top 15, there's one more fight booked, and that fight is in 2 weeks. And that is a massive alarm bell when you've got loads of healthy, strong, young fighters there, and they're all sat twiddling their thumbs.
That's perfect that you just said that. I literally thought you were going to give me a fact that we're going to shoot my argument down, but I'm going to use that to build it a lot more. That just shows my point there, whereas Formiga, like you say, he's got his next fight booked in 2 weeks. If he wins that fight, boom, buzzing, you've got him on a win again then. So yeah, it don't matter if he's lost his last fight. If he wins this one, Carcara France, bang, you've got them set up right then. If he's the only one, you've got Carcara France who's just come off a fight and a win, and you've got Formiga who's booked to fight, so these guys are willing to fight, like you were saying, all these other guys who are fresh, who are basically sitting out twiddling the thumbs, who are not willing to fight, give the guys who are willing to step in there and fight each other a chance. Now, a lot of people can say that, oh, the guys aren't fighting each other because they're not getting put on cards or all like that, but Jesus Christ, fuck me, UFC, I know Dana White doesn't like the division, but the UFC have that many fights and that many cards a year that if these guys are willing to fight each other, then fights would be booked. Simple as that. You'd have more fight nights, more fights, and more prelims and shit like that. And you'd have more main event stars. But unfortunately, like you were saying, most of the guys are sat out twiddling the thumbs.
Yeah, so it's an interesting time. I do feel for that flyweight division. I feel for anyone in it. Hopefully, like you said, there's enough like. There's enough young, hungry talent in there that Dana White thinks that there's something still to play.
Yeah,
with.
You're gonna have to fucking just emerge that women's flyweight and men's flyweight together and just go right, fight between yourselves.
Yeah. So next week, Carlos, back to an actual numbered UFC 248
main event.
Yeah. It's actually not as stacked as it normally is for a numbered UFC
pay-per-view.
On the early prelims, the only really standout fighter is Pollyanna Viana. Going on to the prelims again, there's not a lot of big standout fighters. We've got Gerald Mearshart taking on Darren Wynn, which is probably the biggest fight on there. The actual feature prelim is Sean O'Malley taking on Jose Quinones, which is a decent fight, but it's not one what jumps out and says, wow, this is going to be amazing. Yeah, the fight you're on about got cancelled was Shabazian taking on Brunson.
Yeah.
But we do have Alex Oliveira against Max Griffin. Neil Magny making his comeback. He seems like he's been away for ages. I know he had that suspension for pissing hot, basically. He's taking on Jiang Liang. Benal Darius taking on Draka Claus. And then it's double tiles. We've got Wei Li Zhang taking on the former strawweight champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. That's going to be a banger of a fight if we get the Joanna of old. And then another controversial fight, kind of like the Cejudo versus Aldo one, where Adesanya's picked someone who's on a pretty bad losing streak, to be fair.
But a fucking monster.
And I've I've kind of had this discussion with quite a few people on wrestling Twitter, on MMA Twitter, should I say, who kind of say you shouldn't get these title fights off losing records, and I understand that, but Adesanya has said that everybody tells him that Yoel Romero is the dangerous fighter in this division. Everybody tells him that, and he wants to have that legacy of beating the most dangerous fighter. So Yoel Romero versus Israel Adesanya, that's going to be a banger of a fight if Romero can A, make weight, and B, not gas in the first round.
See, that's it. I'm gonna go over there where people saying that he shouldn't get a fight off a loss. Fair enough. Tell you what, I'll challenge you. If you can go get Romero and beat him, I'll agree with you. I will full on agree with you. I will agree with you and say he doesn't deserve the title shot. But until then, shut the fuck up. Mm. He'll kill you. That's exactly why he's getting that shot. Exactly like you just said. When you've got Darren Till, whose nickname is the fucking Gorilla, who is willing to fight anyone, but on Twitter and that lot saying, yeah, but Yoel Romero can suck a dick, I ain't fighting him. That guy is something to be scared of. He's 42-year-old and still built better than most fucking 20-odd-year-olds. Yeah. Still built better than most fucking professional bodybuilders. Still built better than most people you'll see of these people saying, oh, he should get a title shot. It's like, why? Because you can do 2 sit-ups. Piss off. Mm-hmm. This guy deserves, as many losses as he's got, he's had some total scraps and total wars. Now, fair enough, I don't have as much respect for him because I think he's a cheating piece of shit. Same with Neil Magny, that weren't no supplements. You're a cheater, you prick. But you've got to have respect for him. I've always agreed with the same thing, that steroids doesn't make you a better fighter, it just makes you sort of better at your training regime, at what you do. You can do more, it gives you more. It shouldn't do, but it does. But it doesn't make you a better fighter. That comes down to how much hard work you put in and what you do in the gym. And for me, that fight is going to be fucking phenomenal. You've got Adesanya, who's just a technical genius, who's had more kickboxing fights than I think I've used my microwave. And he's been able to cross over to mixed martial arts and being able to body everyone. I know a lot of people say the Anderson Silva one, yeah, you were fighting an outer prime, but same again, I'll challenge you to go and beat Anderson Silva. Guarantee, even at his age, you'll fucking find an hard work and he'll give you a run for your money. Adesanya is one of them once in a lifetime fighters that you only get the opportunity to see, like I say, once every couple of years. You've got your John Jones, you've got your Anderson Silva, now you've got your Adesanya. Mm-hmm. He's one of them fighters that you jump out and go, thank fuck that he were able to make it out of Nigeria and find City Kickboxing, and basically thank fuck for his coach to being able to train him, and us being able to just watch someone who can not just dance good, but can use that to his fighting benefit. Now, if he can get past Yoel Romero, which I've just got a gut feeling he's going to. A lot of people I've spoken to saying he's going to get his ass knocked out. Possibly. I'm not disagreeing with him. It's a possible. I know if Yoel Romero hits you, you probably are seeing fucking Shadow Realm. But with Adesanya, I think it's just a little bit that skill technically wise, where I think if he don't get stunned or wobbled, he's going to be able to hit and move, stay out, just use his range and distance to stay out the way. Now that's if you're an American can push him up against the cage, close that distance, that's where I believe he's winning that fight. But if he lets Adesanya do Adesanya's game plan and gives him the room that he needs to play, that Adesanya's going to be known as the best middleweight of all time.
Yeah.
And if he then goes on and asks for bones and stuff like that, how can you say no? He tweeted out, I'll tell you that, he tweeted out 2 weeks ago that he wants to fight Stipe, he'll move up straight to heavyweight, he'll fuck Jones off, because Jones has basically said did he say something about Jones didn't want to fight him, something like that, but yeah, he said he'll move straight up and fight Stipe, which he's fought heavyweight in kickboxing, he's won the tournament, so
yeah,
he could possibly fully well do it. Now, will the UFC give him Stipe? I don't think so. I think they'd rather think they'd rather have him fart John Jones rather than Stipe. But if he were to ask for John Jones after this fight, I know I'd said that you don't, I don't want double champions and stuff like that, but if he were willing to drop that middleweight belt and go straight in for a title shot, I'd be so excited to see that fight, and I don't think UFC can say no, but I don't think it'd be in the best interest to say no.
It's
instant money. It's like McGregor versus fucking Khabib again. You're gonna, not just off the trash talking that Adesanya's gonna bring, but you just know how well John Jones and Adesanya match up. It's just gonna be too technical. It's literally going to be what everyone wanted to see with Anderson Silva and John Jones fighting 5-7 years ago.
Yeah.
We're going to get to see. Yeah, Jones might be a little bit older now, but he's still John Bones Jones, and he's going to fight a young Adesanya. That's possibly.
It's going to be the next few weeks in USA. There's some absolute banging cards. But thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the show at 5 Rounds Pod. Thanks for listening, guys. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.